Hey, this is Michelle Dawson, and I need to update my disclosure statements. So my non-financial disclosures, I actively volunteer with Feeding Matters, National Foundation of Swallowing Disorders, NFOSD, Dysphagia Outreach Project, DOP. I am a former treasurer with the Council of State Association Presidents, CSAP, a past president of the South Carolina Speech, Language, and Hearing Association, SCISHA, a current Board of Trustees member with the Communication Disorders Foundation of Virginia, and I am a current member of ASHA, ASHA SIG 13, SCISHA, the Speech Language Hearing Association of Virginia, SHAV, a member of the National Black Speech Language Hearing Association in BOSLA, and Dysphagia Research Society, DRS. My financial disclosures include receiving compensation for First Bite Podcast from SpeechTherapyPD.com, as well as from additional webinars and for webinars associated with Understanding Dysphagia, which is also a podcast with SpeechTherapyPD.com. And I currently receive a salary from the University of South Carolina in my work as adjunct professor and student services coordinator, and I receive royalties from the sale of my book, Chasing the Swallow: Truth, Science, and Hope for Pediatric Feeding and Swallowing Disorders, as well as compensation for the CEUs associated with it from SpeechTherapyPD.com. So those are my current disclosure statements. Thanks, guys.
Hi, this is Erin Forward, and these are my disclosure statements. I receive a salary from Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center. I receive royalties from Speech Therapy PD for my work with First Bite Podcast and other presentations. I also receive payment for sales from the First Bite Boutique, which I have with Michelle Dawson. For non-financial disclosures, I am a member of ASHA and a member of Special Interest Group 13. I also am a volunteer for Feeding Matters. I am a contributor for the book Chasing the Swallow with Michelle Dawson, which I receive no financial gain. I also am a member of the South Carolina Coalition Committee with ICDL-DIF for a time.
Okay, folks, this is truly an event. When I say I am honored and I am humbled to have our guest today, that is, well, hell's bells, that's kind of an understatement in truth. Y'all, I met our guest, Farwa Hussein, at ASHA last year, actually on stage, because she was nominated to be an ASHA innovator representing the state of New Jersey. So she was like Miss New Jersey. And I remember her because she was radiant, and we were both wearing green, different shades of green, but we both had green, which, you know, I guess it's a precursor to Seattle. So come visit us in Seattle. But y'all, she is truly a leader in our field. Now, her subspecialty is actually Gestalt language processing, but a little bit about Farwa, because I get to toot people's horns, and that makes me very, very happy. She is a bilingual speech-language pathologist. She's a private practice owner of one-on-one speech therapy. She's also the current president of, it was Morris Speech, Language, and Hearing. It's an association representing Morris County, New Jersey. She was also recently nominated to be Clinician of the Year for MBASLA, which is the National Black Association of Speech, Language, and Hearing. She has such a positive, affirming social media presence, which, let's be honest, that is sometimes lost in our field. And she's driving the change. Also, at the end, because I don't want to pop her bubble, she has like this amazing product that she's come out with, and she's hooking First Bite up with a discount. So huzzah, we will hold on that one to the end. But Farwa, thank you so much for coming on, hon.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so honored to be here and so humbled by your wonderful introduction.
When you go out there and you are a change maker, you don't necessarily want to shine your own light. So having somebody else toot your horn, yeah, we need that every once in a while, because not everybody knows the hard walk it takes to get there. So
it's been a journey. I'm so excited to be here, though. It's nice to see the change that's coming along from it.
Yes. Hey, First Bite, that's what we do. Okay. So everybody has a backstory, and that's one of my favorite things. For better, for worse, we all have our this is how we got here. So Can you take us from the top and tell us, how did you become an SLP and then go into this little world of GLP? Because that's like a subspecialty, kind of like PFD. So yeah.
And this is a subspecialty that's just popping up, right? So, So I graduated from the University of Texas at Dallas with an undergraduate degree in speech-language pathology. I was the only clinician of color that was in that program. And that was one of the reasons why I chose it, because I wanted to do something different and I wanted to help as many people as I can. And I didn't see anybody that looked like me. And I didn't see anybody that accepted anyone that was different. So my entire life has been trying to fit in and trying to be like everybody else. I don't have the right hair color. I don't have the right skin color. I don't have the right way of speaking, walking, talking, dressing. So I said, you know what? I'm going to try something different and maybe this will help me get into medical school. So I did my undergraduate and decided I loved it. So I got a job as an SLPA in the school system. I was working for a Title I school as an SLPA, and my car was constantly getting keyed. Like, I was always getting written up for what I was wearing. And I was wearing like a sweater dress and a long tights and boots and be like, oh no, you're not doing it the way the other therapists are doing it. Why are you in the gym? Why are you doing it this way? So I said,
what did they want you to do? Sit at a table?
Yes. We needed to be sitting at a table in a chair, and I needed to be wearing two-piece sweater set and khaki pants.
Oh my God. So that's like Stepford Wives. I'm sorry. That's freaking scary. And it's like Stepford Wives. Okay. Yeah.
So I said, all right, I got engaged and I was going to move to New Jersey. So my husband said, why don't you just apply to graduate school, apply to Columbia? And I said, I will never get in. Are you kidding me? Like, I'm a little brown girl that is just barely getting by. He said, just do it. So I applied and I got in, but I got declined everywhere else. Kane University, anywhere in New Jersey, New York, Connecticut area. And I was like, well, I guess this is where it's meant to be. This is where I'm supposed to go because all the other doors have been closed. So then I went to Columbia for my graduate degree. During my graduate school, it's hard being a clinician with different mindsets, different cultural backgrounds, but this was the first place I got to see other clinicians that spoke more languages than English, that came from different environments. And I was like, wow, this is incredible. When I submitted my paperwork one day, I was in a school system. They wanted me to write notes on how the kid's progress did. The clinician, my graduate professor at the time, the clinician threw the papers at my face and said, you're a disgrace to Columbia University.
Are you freaking kidding
me? So I went crying to the clinic director and I said, this is what she said. I don't think this is the right setting for me. She's very toxic because she would be like, you better not be having children. You better not be getting, like, how are you already married? Like, what are you doing? And she's like, you know what? There's no other spots available. You have to stick it out. I was like, fine. I'm going to stick it out. So I stuck it out in all the other programs. Just being the odd one out and having to conform. So when I got my C's, I was working for another private practice and said, can I have a supervisory role? And they'd be like, oh, you know what? You can be in charge of the fun committee. I was like, what's that? I'm like, just set up things that are fun for every other therapist. I'd be in a medical setting and I'd be like, well, they'd give me all the harder clients because I'd be like, we don't want to do this. Farwick can take care of this. And I'd be like, can I have a full-time job here? Oh no, we don't have any openings. Next week they hire a white clinician to take over the caseload. So I was burnt out. I was tired. I was done. And I said, I don't think this is for me. I took a long break from speech therapy. I didn't think I was going to come back. I had my children and I was on the opposite side of the waiting room. My kids were getting PT, OT, speech, and I didn't like how they came and talked to me. And they were telling me all the things that were wrong with my kid. I'm like, but do you know the things he could do with a cardboard box? Did you just see how he created all that? And they're like, no, that's not right. And I was like, something's not right. And I was like, I'm going to go back. I was like, T, I don't like people talking to my kids like that. I don't want this for other people's kids. T's my husband. And he's like, all right, go back to work. So I went back and I started working for someone else. And I was getting talked to because the parents were hearing something different from me. Because I was saying, your child is amazing. They're wonderful. Let's focus on their strengths. And they were like, but that's not what the other clinicians are saying. They're saying we have to work on X, Y, and Z because they're lacking the skills. And I was like, can we work on the things that they like? And then all the other skills will fill in. I got the research articles for it. They're like, no, no, no. Why are you letting them stim? I'm like, what's the problem? And they're like, and I was like, I'm only seeing your child for 25 minutes. So for them to come in and for them to create safety, for me to get anything done, is this something that I'm going to really choose? Like, I think I can work on something higher. Now, Farwa, this kid's being pulled off your case, so the parents aren't happy. I was like, I need more time. You're running sessions over. And I'm like, well, I'm not getting much done in 25 minutes. I'm coming back into the field because I want to create true change. I want to just help one person. Let me just help one kid. So I could not last at that practice. And I said, I'm going to do it on my own. Clinic director said, good luck. You are never going to find another place. You're not going to be able to make it. In the meantime, I've always done volunteer work. I was part of Morris County Speech and Hearing Association. They're absolutely wonderful. They embraced me for who I was. I'm currently serving as president for that amazing organization. And there have been members that have been part of the organization for 50 years. So I was like, this is where I need to be because this is the environment I need. And I said, a shark only grows as big as the tank that they're in. I was like, maybe it's my environment. So I was doing all the things that I thought I needed to do as a parent. My son doesn't like haircuts. I'm going to force him to have haircuts. He doesn't like wearing full pants. You're going to wear these full pants. And then finally, I was like, you know what? Let's just tell me what you want to do. Okay, you want to wear shorts in winter? Can you roll up your socks all the way up high? I'm going to buy you some knee socks. And when you get to school, you roll them down. Today, the teachers were having a hard time with him. He's moving around too much. They're constantly sending him out of the room. And I was like, you know what? I don't think it's you. Let's just help your environment. Let's alter your environment to what you need. I'm going to do the same for myself. So I started my private practice and I was like, I'm just going to help one person. Like, I don't even need anything else. I just want to leave a mark in this world. So I started with one, ended up being two, ended up being a location, and ended up being my calling. My son currently just today got honor roll.
Yes.
So the things that everybody said we couldn't do, we're doing and we're thriving. So long story is that we're going to get hit with a lot of negativity, especially when we're trying something new and different and we're trying to change how people see things. Everybody was like, oh, you're not doing evidence-based work. I'm like, I'm doing evidence-based work across multiple disciplines. I was trying to piecemeal together different things. So I was reading articles on physical therapy, occupational therapy, motor speech disorders, counseling, and psychology.
You were tying it together.
It was the whole child because I just wanted to help that one child. I started reaching out to every researcher that I could think of and be like, can you help me? What am I missing? What am I not doing right? And it was always like, what am I not doing right as a therapist? Because it's not the child, it's the environment. So when I came in and changed my mindset, it really moved mountains for the kids. It really made me a stronger clinician from it because it's always me that's not doing it right. Let me fix it for you. Let me give you the right environment. And then the kids were making faster progress. The things that I could accomplish in six sessions, they hadn't had these gains in years. So parents started talking. Other clinicians started asking me what I was doing. We ended up co-creating the Connect and Play program with Dr. Joni. She's a physical therapist. And with occupational therapy, where children are getting OTPT speed supports, drumming, art, music, yoga. We go out to the farm. And the kids last year that were in the Connect and Play program for the 4 weeks have unbundled their language and off my caseload and are getting off of their services. So it's all about giving the children the right environment to thrive. And not just the children, the moms get to connect, the parents get to connect, they feel safe. But to get here has not been easy because we're here working against a system that thinks differently than us.
So what you just highlighted was my favorite autumn t-shirt design that says my favorite season of all is the fall of the patriarchy. And it's got little fall leaves. And bear in mind, I'm a boy mom married to a white man and have two little white boys. But we're feminist in our household. And you can be a feminist and you can be pro-human and do it respectfully. And that's what your walk is literally a live and breathe and testament of. You have an uncanny ability to see them where they are and see yourself where you are and to thrive where you put yourself where you needed to be planted so that you could then fulfill your calling.
It's so beautiful to see the transition that's happened in the last 15 years, because initially parents would call and be like, can she speak English? My name's different. It's Farwa Sin, right? Now they're calling me and be like, do you speak my language? Are you my people? Do you have the same thoughts as me? And that's so powerful. I mean, it took time, right, to get here. But now that we're here, I want to spread this information and knowledge and empower other clinicians, which has led me to do a lot of community work.
Yes. Okay. So you say you're bilingual, and I'm curious, what languages do you speak?
So I speak Urdu and Hindi as well as English, and I understand a lot of the South Asian dialects as well and languages.
We had our boys enrolled in a Mandarin school. So for 4 years, they were learning English and Mandarin. Oh, I miss it so much because half the day was taught in Mandarin. And to have them immersed in a new culture like that and being exposed. And now we go to a different school because we moved from South Carolina to Virginia. Their private school is housed on the Virginia School for the Deaf and Blind. So they have immersive recess, and they have with like the deaf school, and they have choir and music with the blind school. And so we're getting in-depth playtime with, and it's just, I don't know, it's really, really cool to see Bear, you know, because it's a small town, and he's like, Mom, I know that. Should we play recess together? And she taught me, and he's starting to like, you know, show me the little signs that like his little friend taught him. And but it's those little moments. Okay. So we went in a different route to open than what we actually are going to talk about over the course of today, but it is of merit. Our profession is predominantly upper class, middle-aged white women, and that's the gospel. I literally embody that, even though I'm a member of the Potawatomi tribe and have a little Cherokee amongst other in my bloodline, but I know what it looked like, and I know that it's open doors for me. And that there is power there to be an ally and to open doors for others. And so sometimes that means we have to advocate and be proactive. When we join our state associations, when we join our local chapters or countywide associations, there's opportunities there to go immediately into high schools to raise awareness about what our field is, to go to the schools that might not otherwise have allied health reach out and say, hey, have you heard about our profession? So if you're listening and you want to be the source of change, may I recommend you volunteer a little time with your local associations, whether that be county or state, in addition to ASHA, but volunteer locally and let's raise awareness and open the doors for our field so that it becomes reflective of the beautiful melting pot that we all are, because there's power there. So there's my tiny soapbox in really pretty pastel purple tennis shoes. So on that note, GLPs, how is it gestalt? I don't know the first, how you say the first word there appropriately. So make me better.
It's gestalt language processing.
Say this again.
Gestalt.
Like with the SH sound in the middle?
Yes. That's how I say it. But I've heard clinicians say gestalt.
That's like dysphagia and dysphagia. I am of the opinion it's like a potato and a patata, like tomato, tomato. So like
pretty much. It just, and you know, the thing is, it's a German word that means chunk, but it just sounds a chunk of scary, and that's not what it's supposed to be, right? It's just like a fun phrase my kids are learning.
You said chunk, and all I could think of was Goose this morning almost blew chunks at the breakfast table. Y'all, I promise this squirrel is worth it. So we were sitting there eating breakfast, and the 9-year-old tells the 11-year-old, my 11-year-old's my sensory kid, probably on the spectrum. Well, we know on the spectrum. And he goes, did you know there's cowboy caviar in your French toast? And I was like, Bubby, do you know what cowboy caviar is? And he goes, yeah, it's when a cowboy lays an egg, because he saw it on The Adventures of Gumball from Cartoon Network. I was like, no, honey, that's bull's testicles. And so the goose almost blew chunks at the table. And I was like, yeah, there are no bull's balls in your French toast sticks, bud. Let's keep eating breakfast. But like,
so being funny.
A boy mom for neurodiverse children is not for the faint of heart.
No, I have three boys myself.
Yes. Okay. So gestalt means chunk and not to blow chunks. That's a good starting point. Okay. We're going to go uphill from here.
So the research has been out about gestalt language processing since the 80s. Our field kind of just took a little turn and it got lost. And now it's coming back from because of wonderful researchers like Marge Blanc and Alexandra Zafkos and Barry Persaud and Ann Peters, which is so great to see. Like, there's so much out there.
I remember coming through grad school and being taught not about gestalt, I'm going to try to correct how I say this, but about echolalia. And how echolalia was a bad thing. And that's how it was presented to me, was that if you have a child that's presenting in echolalia, and that was the term even before scripting, that it was bad, that they might not ever learn standard English this way. And now, this many years later, I'm like, their echolalia is gestalt, and that's a script, and that is them joyfully communicating, more than functional. It's joyful communication. And
it's,
I think,
meaningful. It's so wonderful. Yes. The first 10 years of my career, I've been trying to extinguish it. Then I became a mom and I realized, I don't want this for my children. Why would I extinguish it for your child?
Yes. Yes. Can you talk to us about, like, what are the steps and stages of gestalt?
Sure. So gestalt language processing follows a framework, which is called the Natural Language Acquisition Framework. It has been a seminal work by Marge Blanc, who built on Dr. Barry Persaud's work. Dr. Barry Persaud talked about the first four stages of gestalt language processing, and then Marge Blanc ended on the last two. So the first stage is echolalia. So these are children that have delayed echolalia. And what delayed echolalia is, they're hearing something from their environment, reading it, looking at it, taking it, whether it be from their body, their mouth words, or their actions, and they're recalling it at a later time, at a different time, in order to convey something meaningful to them. So now, immediate echolalia is different. That's when we say something and they repeat it right back. How are you? How are you? Now, that's meaningful and purposeful too. It's to hold a spot, turn-taking, for conversational exchange, to process language. But the second you're holding it, storing it, and recalling it at a different time, now we're moving through the stages of gestalt language processing. So the first stage is delayed echolalia. They're holding it. Now, we're trying to stay away from the word echolalia because the whole goal is to make it positive. So we're going to call it a gestalt. Scripting, gestalt, delayed echolalia all mean the same thing. But if we can give them that power back and say, you know what, this is cool what you're doing and it's natural, it follows a framework, then parents are easy. Like, it takes away that fear that the parents have. Like, there's something wrong with my child. No, this is how they learn. Many times children will unbundle their language and be comparable to an analytic learner, which is what we're traditionally taught building, by like 3.5, 4. So there's so many kids that don't even need our services and they've unbundled it. The ones that show up on our caseload are kind of stuck in these earlier stages. So stage two then is when they're taking what they've learned, they're changing it. It could be they're shortening it, they're adding on to it, or they're combining more than one thing that they've already taken. So that's mitigation. Stage three is single word isolation. At this point, they've taken the soundtrack of their environment, everything that they've learned, and they're able to unbundle it. And now they're realizing that one word has one unit of meaning, and it means one thing. So you're holding a teacup. Teacup is a teacup. This stage is comparable to our first words. Children that are analytic learners learning their first word and then combining on it. Because kids, what are we taught? Kids learn a word, they put together a phrase, then they put sentences together. Those extra two stages is what Gestalt language processors need to go through to get here, to stage three. And then four, five, and six are all about grammar. They're self-generating their own phrases, making complex sentences, and they're making new novel utterances.
That is literally a beautiful explanation. So I start thinking back as you're describing this and thinking back of all the different tiny humans that I've worked with over the years and like where they were on the processes. And there was this one little guy who was on my caseload in the I started out as a speech teacher in the public schools a lifetime ago before they officially had SLPAs. It was like a precursor, right? I had this one little boy on my caseload because I was working full-time and going to grad school full-time at night. So that was intense. And whenever there was a assembly in the auditorium, he would get really nervous and you'd see him rocking. And he would start narrating the Animal Planet's top 10 deadliest countdown. His memory, I wonder, he's got to be at this stage of the game, probably in college age now, because how many? Oh, I just made myself very old. But you could tell he was upset because it was the script that he picked was the deadliest countdown. And if he was really happy, we would narrate and script different top 10 countdowns. But that was indicative of the mood in the environment. But Bubby would script like the entire episode and just rock. And that was how he processed what was going on and the sounds and the sights and too many humans.
Himself and
yes, yes. And I just let him do it and then would ask questions and say, oh, what about the tarantula? And then, you know, he would script more about like a set spider. I hate spiders. So kudos to me for even asking about the spider. But
isn't it incredible as clinicians that we carry these kids with us in our hearts? Like when I started learning about Gestalt language processing, I had one friend that kept coming to mind. I'm like, oh, I didn't do right by him. I didn't do right by him. Why didn't I? Why didn't I know this? So I called up mom and I said, hey, can I give you a scholarship? Like, I don't need anything from you. He's 26 now. He came to me a few years ago when I started my private practice. I said, just, this is more for me than it is for you. Let me just do this. He saw my face and he said, no speech, no speech, no speech. I said, no, 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 please. This is going to be totally different. This is not what we thought it was. I get it. I get it. I'm not going to sit at a table with you. Let's just hang out. So now he calls it Fun with Barwa. And at 26, he just got his AAC system. At 26, it was the first time in his life that he requested something that he wanted. Bike. Walmart, bike, putting him in stage three, because before it was just scripting and it was all scripts of don't do that, don't touch this, sit down, quiet hands, sit down, quiet hands, sit down, quiet hands. And that's powerful. I'm like, you don't realize the things that, like, you coming here is not therapy for you, it's for me. Because I feel like as a clinician, I didn't do right by you. But
we did as best we could with the knowledge that we had.
Yes.
And that is why we engage in lifelong learning to evolve our skill set. If I practice the way I was taught 15 years ago, I would take a piece of plastic and shove it in every kid's mouth and we would work on mastication patterns. Thank the Lord, I know and have read Dr. Georgia Malandrecki and her wife, Dr. Jamie Bowers, or out of Purdue IEATS, that we know rotary chew patterns don't evolve until 12 and tonal implications. We don't need to use things that vibrate in hard plastic, but like Michelle practicing today versus Michelle practicing in 2009, those are two different Michelles. Thank goodness for that.
Yeah. And thank goodness for autistic adults and voices coming out to help this neurodiversity affirming movement, because that's who I'm going to. Tell me your experience. Tell me how I can help support the next generation of children.
Okay, so you've talked about AAC, and I love AAC. After PFD, AAC is like my next big love, just because so many tiny humans that I have worked with over the years had multiple etiologies, like multiple things going on. And so we had delayed spoken language because of, you know, X, Y, and Z, maybe trachs, who knows, lots of causal factors. I have seen this pop up in debates, and not like public debates, but like in chat forums with respect to the AAC. When we are setting up initial programming, do we program with their current GLP? Do we program with their target GL, like the next level? Do we program individual words like lamp? Do we do chunks of phrases on the device? And it seems, from what I have seen, it's kind of all over the place, but I feel like we have to tailor it to each child. But what is your thought process and resources and make us better?
100% AAC needs to be customized to the child. Now, any and all of the AAC systems out there are designed for an analytic language processor. So we do need to customize it for a Gestalt language processor.
Can you explain the difference between the two processors for those that aren't familiar with that analytic language processing term?
Sure. So analytic language processing is what we're traditionally taught as children learning language. I want you to think of it as Legos. So when we are building, we're going to put the Legos together and we're going to build on top one word at a time. So it'll be mama, pull them to eat pizza. So now I've created a phrase, which is a new sentence, right? It's a block, word plus word plus word. That's analytic language learning. So when we're thinking about Gestalt language processing, I want you to think of a tower already built and a few other towers. So we have these longer scripts. It could be rain, rain, go away, come again another day, a full phrase, and then let's get out of here. So, and then the children are going to take these phrases and these longer chunks that have one unit of meaning because they haven't broken it apart just yet. And they're going to mix and match it. And then they're going to come down to their single words. And then they're going to build on this tower. So analytic language processing, traditionally what we're taught, word, phrase, sentence generation. For Gestalt language processors, they learn in bigger chunks. And then they unbundle it to single words. And then they build back up on it. So when we come to AAC use, and for many years, I have avoided AAC, because I thought and I was taught that mouth words were the way to go. You know what? We're just going to force them to talk. I don't need to give them this multimodal support. AAC evaluation is only for the specialist. That is not for you. You are just a generalist. So I've avoided it. And then I realized that there was something missing because most of our children have some kind of underlying motor difficulties that are not being talked about, right? And I think the latest research said up to 90% of neurodivergent autistic children have sensory differences as well as physical gross motor differences. So even if they have mouth words, there's days where they don't have access to. There might be days or times where they're dysregulated, but they can't access that. So I want to give them the support that they need. So when it comes to AAC, we're thinking about what supports can I give you on those days that you don't have access to it? What supports can I give you if you don't have mouth words at any given time? Because communication is what's important, right? So how I start with them is depends on the stage that they're in, because there are six stages. Usually the younger, the better. And I always want to set up we're never taking away how the system is set up. I'm not deleting the homepage. I'm not taking away icons because it's also part of motor planning. We want our children to get to the point where they're self-generating and using it as it's meant to be. But in the initial stages, I might have a phrase page and I'll put communication functions that are important to the child and the gestalts that are important. So I have a little friend that likes to communicate with bubble guppy videos. So I'm going to put this bubble guppy video.
I love bubble guppies. Yes.
I have another friend that communicates via voices from YouTube, like Bear Hunt and a lot of different songs. One likes Taylor Swift, so we're going to put Taylor on there. There are so many beautiful things that come from musical lyrics, so why not use them? But we also, along with that, need to give them power phrases. I need some space. I don't like that. This is fun. Let's do it together. So I always have a phrases page in there, and then we're going to work out of it. If they're in stage two, then maybe that icon hits and goes to another page, because then they're mitigating, because it's going to let's go to school. Let's go to home. Let's go out of here. And then stage three is your single words. So you're going back to your core word section in those pages. And four, five, and six are all about that self-generation. And then I have to say Meaningful Speech has an AAC course. Emily Diaz is launching a AAC, an Introduction to GLP course next week. So there's a lot of fantastic, amazing clinicians that are doing the research and putting that information out there. So I highly recommend you follow them.
Yes. And folks, OSU, the Ohio State University, has some absolutely brilliant researchers. Dr. Allison Bean, she is doing a ton of stuff on AAC. Dr. Michelle Thierin, who's the current ASHA topic chair for AAC. She's out of Florida State University, and her research is on how to make a friend if you use an AAC device. But like, at the end of the day, isn't that kind of what we want? We want connection. And whether you use mouth words, or which is another term that we can use for spoken language, instead of as a field, we're moving away from verbal and nonverbal, because there's implications on intelligence and ableism behind those words. So mouth words is a phrase that if we listen to our autistic adults and teens, that they identify that they feel more comfortable using that phrase. Also like spoken language for, so just as a frame of reference for if you're unfamiliar with the term mouth words. There's also another organization out there that I would recommend everybody go check out. It's, see if I can get the acronym right, USAAC. And this organization trains individuals in how to train first responders to communicate with users of AAC, and why AAC is important as part of a, if there's an emergency and they're being rescued, why that AAC should also be rescued. You know, it's like an extension of that human, like a wheelchair or a crutch or a cane. And so it's that, and that entity is a nonprofit, and they tithe their time and train folks on how to train first responders, which I feel like if we did more training there, could prevent catastrophic communication breakdowns in the future. Yes. Segue
but
back
I
over.
Do have to say the positive things that are coming about with the iPad is that the stigma of a self-generated voice device output device has been gone. Like my parents are like, oh, it's just an app. I'm like, yeah, it's just an app. We got this. We can do this. We can skip all those extra steps. We trial and do all the things, but it's not as scary anymore. Because now everybody's carrying around a phone. Everybody has a device. You know, everybody's texting. Everybody's like, who's on the phone anymore?
Yes. Actually, I saw an article last week that in Northern California, up in the mountainous terrain area, they were contemplating getting rid of landlines altogether because everybody's gone digital, right? But it's so rugged and rural up there in that particular locale that they can't get cell service. And so they were like, if you take our landlines, you know, if something happens, we can't communicate out. And I was like, I forget, because we live, I mean, where I live, that's a non-issue, but there are pockets of even this country where we don't have digital access. And it just, I don't know, it's a refresher that like, not everybody has. Do better, Michelle. Do better. Okay. So I appreciate your explanation on how to consider programming the devices, because that's trying to guide students through those clinical decision-making processes on and trying to train students and how to train caregivers. It can be very challenging when you have a young adult that you're training who is not a caregiver themselves, and like coaching them there. Do you have any advice for that?
Yeah. A lot of it is bringing them in and letting them program it themselves. Like for my 26-year-old friend, I started putting in phrases and then I was like, wait, you can do it yourself. And I handed it over and he did it. And I said, I just put you in a box. I am so sorry for that. I am so sorry for not thinking you couldn't do this. And be like, do you want to put that in? Yeah. Do you want to record your own voice on there? No. And then before you even start, many of our Gestalt language processors are very musically inclined and take in the environmental sounds. So the first thing I do is let them choose the voice, let them choose the pitch, the rate of speech. A lot of times we need to increase the rate of speech for them because they're picking up the soundtrack first, the intonation patterns first. So when we slow it down too much, you're breaking up that sound. It doesn't sound so good. I'll have mom or dad or their sibling record themselves on there because that sounds much better than a boy robot. Those are very important considerations. And even if they don't have verbal output of speech, they will let you know with their body when they don't like it. They'll cover their ears and say, I don't like this voice. I don't want to do this. You'll see them light up when they do find a voice that they like. Put the power in their hands. It's their talker. It's their device. That's where I'm starting. And I'm starting from, let's figure this out together because this is yours. That's been really powerful for the families and for the young adults.
Learned that trial by fire a few years ago, probably 2 summers ago now. I worked with a little girl who was diagnosed with autism, and it was very difficult for the family because of, and the mom was very candid. Her family had, and their culture felt a certain way about a diagnosis of autism. And this little, God, she was brilliant. She's freaking brilliant. She saw me enter the passcode on her device. One time, I didn't think anything of it because she was sitting right next to me. As her mom described it, she hacked into her device and added a bunch of phrases after, you know, the session. She goes, Michelle, she came to me on Saturday morning and said, my name is X. I don't want to hear no. I want blueberries and Doritos now. Please.
Oh my God. It's like standing ovation to you.
It's like, yes. But she figured out how to add Doritos and blueberries. And I mean, I had already put her name in there because, you know, like we need it. But like that one child changed my perception. And it, because I assumed, do you hear the words I'm using? I assumed that at 4, she was unable to explain her autonomy. And I'm a mom of children. I should have known better because I know how fiercely independent my children were at 4, but wow, just wow. And after that, it just kind of, it made me reassess my view of an AAC device and its role. I will never forget that. And she was also the same child that changed her strap. Like instead of the strap that came with the device, she would use her mother and her grandmother's scarves so that they matched her outfit because it all had to match. And like, I appreciate that.
I love that. And I have to say, I've been starting kids as early as 2 that are starting with me. And it's, parents are like, no, I don't know. Oh, it's incredible the things that they're doing. I have my little friend who's 2, as went up having a bad day, something's bothering me. I want to go home. Like, I don't feel good. Like, that communication could have been lost within a meltdown and a tantrum, and we'd be trying to figure out what's going on with you. But now you're able to advocate for yourself. So we're giving you that ability and we're building your confidence. Because one thing that a lot of research says is many of our neurodivergent and autistic children and adults end up being bullied. They end up having a higher rate of suicide. If we can just empower them, think about all that struggle that we've been able to avoid. And that's important. So as clinicians, we need to think about not just 3-month goals, not just 6-month goals, but what is our goal for them in the lifetime? What is their goal? Like as parents, and I think one thing that really changed how I practice is I became a mom. Like I see the kids as what I would want for my children. And I have an open conversation with the parents and be like, what are your goals? Like, what is your ultimate goal for your child? And it is always the same. We want safety. We want connection. We want our children to be loved. We want them to be able to advocate for themselves. We want them to live healthy, happy lives. Why would I do anything to take away from that? I just want to support you. I want to support your family.
I have a special needs autistic brother-in-law. He is about to turn 46. And cognitively, developmentally, we have microcephaly, cortical vision impairment, CP, ASD, thyroid condition, all of Maddie's got a little bit of everything, right? Maddie has a passion for underground and garage radio on satellite. So if anybody listens to satellite Sirius FM, like underground and garage bands are Maddie's specialty. He also can tell you any single fact about Paw Patrol that you could possibly want to know. The band knows what he is about. And it also includes Power Rangers and Hot Wheels cars, right? Like we know. But it's interesting to see having an adult autistic brother-in-law putting that perspective, life goals, it brings home in a way that I could not convey otherwise what long-term plans look like. Dr. Carol Page was one of my mentors. She was the director of the South Carolina Assistive Technology Program. And she always told me, start where you want to end. And I thought that was so powerful because I made Matthew the end. Because he can do so much and lives his life to the fullest. And his life looks different than another individual's, but that's his life and he has joy there. But he scripts, we narrate. I mean, he would be a stage six because we have our scripts, but we break it down and we build it up. And grammar, sometimes we have some irregular pronouns or irregular past tense verbs we'll throw him, but they also do my youngest who didn't hear for the first 2 years, right? It does put a challenge on us when we're working with children to go to the darker, scarier places of choosing vocabulary that might challenge our preconceived notions and our biases, because bad things happen to some of Matthew's classmates, like their sexual assault occurs in high school. And being able to empower our GLP communicators with negations, with no, don't do that, having that vocabulary and modeling that vocabulary now, prevent and save horrible things from happening. And that's really uncomfortable to talk about as a mom and as a sister-in-law, but something that we have to talk about as professionals.
And something, this is a really good point. We also have to have that open dialogue with the family. One of the phrases that I was trying to give an adult was don't shoot, because this is a colored adult. And that's something important because there's so much things in the media about our disabled Black individuals, right? And one of my presentations, I was in a school and I showed that video. All the therapists felt very uneasy. But this is a topic we need to feel that because that's how we're going to grow. So that is important to the family. That is important to me. Don't shoot. Yes. I will give that's something we can model because it's important to you and your lifestyle.
You have to be brave enough to acknowledge that that is the elephant in the room that we have to actually go there and talk about. And body vocabulary, putting body vocabulary on an AAC device, that can be really uncomfortable for some caregivers. But just because an individual is not speaking doesn't mean that they don't want to have sex. So let's clarify that for the room, because I have had adults a lifetime ago. I worked with adults and I will never forget my one favorite couple would come in and they were so mad when they walked in the door. And I was like, what happened? Because he had a stroke and he had anomia. And he was like, I want. And I was like, y'all couldn't see the gesture. And I was like, I am a little uncomfortable right now. So the wife told me, she was like, I didn't know what he was trying to tell me. And he goosed me, but it was, you know, so I ended up having to pull the PT in. And then we ended up having to talk about the, and yeah, but like,
It's part of communication.
It's part of communication. But he had paresis on the right side of his body. So they had to strategize how to physically make the happen. And then we had to come up with word retrieval so that we could communicate that. But the same happens for our teens and our young adults and adults that are GLP learners. So let's, while there's also the scary bad part, there's also the really fun part. And I don't know about you, but that is kind of fun. And so there's that. Who knew we were going to talk about sex being fun today when we talked about this?
I literally was just thinking this. I was like, how did we end up here? I mean, we're safe. This is a safe space.
It's a safe space. I had a really good cup of coffee and a cup of tea already this morning. So huzzah. But okay, so what resources for those of us that were taught one way and we're learning about Gestalt, do you have like a favorite spreadsheet? What resources do you have for those of us that are learning it as the clinician versus resources for the caregiver or the individual?
Yeah. So there's four main courses out there right now on Gestalt language processing. If you are looking for free resources, Marge Blanc has made all those available on her website, which is a communicationdevelopmentcenter.com website. You can find all the latest research, articles, and even have access to her as well. The courses out there are the Meaningful Speech course. There is a directory that you can go and find clinicians in your, if you're a parent, that you can find clinicians that are NLA trained. There is the Northern Speech Services course, which is a 3-part course. It's more of a college level course run by Marge Blanc. There is a Dr. Amanda Blackwell, Paulina Elias, and Marge Blanc have a course in Spanish, which is the Communication Natural course. Communication Natural or Natural Communication. It's also in Spanish and in English for both families, and that's at a better price point and have easy access, and they have monthly meetups for parents. And then if you're a South Asian clinician, there is a course out of India called Uncleft for clinicians in Hindi. Now, if you have a desire to learn about music and Gestalt language processing, because there's a lot of music involved in what we do, Corinne Zamus has a course as well.
I love her. I've had her on the podcast. She is a delight. Yes.
She has a music and Gestalt language processing course as well. So where would you start? The places I would guide you would be Dr. Amanda Blackwell's 1-hour free webinar. And then choose the courses that you that bring you joy. Meaningful Speech is wonderful. Dr. Amanda Blackwell and Marge Blanc's courses are wonderful as a starter. Then you go into all the research and then you dive in. It's like give a mouse a cookie. Once you start, you just want all that information. And then check out that Communication Development Center.
Now wait, don't you host support groups and what support meetups? Talk to me about that.
Yeah. So for me, it was very important to create a community, not just a community for parents, but a community for clinicians. When I started in my area, I was the only one doing this exclusively, the only neurodiversity affirming clinician. And that was hard because everywhere was, no, you're not doing it right. So I started having clinicians that had the same mindset as me. Come join me. Like, let's hang out together. Let's just talk. Let's just connect. And it was open to everybody. And it really caught on because clinicians need a support group ourselves. We need somebody to connect with. We need somebody to talk to, especially about Gestalt language processing because it is newer. It is uncomfortable. It's really hard when you've done things a certain way your entire career. And then all of a sudden, what do you mean child-led, play-based? What do you mean neurodiversity affirming? What do you mean I'm going to just let them script? What does that look like? Well, let me show you. Because we can't come in to any environment and say, I know better than you. You know what? You're doing it wrong. No. We're not creating change that way. I'm going to come in and meet you where you're at and let me guide you. So we just recently did a meetup this weekend. I hosted it in my office and I did a sound bath for clinicians. So that's when we had one of our enrichment leaders, Alex Gonzalez, came in and we have different sound drums that light up, and he creates music inside the drums while we lay down on the yoga mats and clear our minds. The vibration of those drums helps, and it moves the cells in our bodies, and it helps us relax, and it helps reduce anxiety. It was the coolest experience, and I wanted the clinicians to experience something different, something that's been around for thousands of years, and say, wait, if I'm enjoying this and this is something different, I can try something new in my therapy sessions. We want to open up their world from a place of working together and a place of community. So I host in-person meetups that are at no cost to clinicians. I also do free webinars for families. My most recent one is going to be next week on creating authentic friendships. It's not about gatekeeping the information. The more we talk about it, the more awareness that we have on it, the more change that we can create, the more positive experiences that can come from it. And that's how families find me. They're like, oh my gosh, so-and-so told me about this. This is so cool. Let me learn more. Let me learn from you. And then even the clinicians will be in a different state and be like, I saw you do that, Farwa. That was really cool. I'm going to do it in my state. One thing that we did, Dr. Joni Redlich, she's a phenomenal physical therapist, and she's world renowned in her TMR approach, which is total motion release. It's a strength-based approach on working with the body. Her and I created the Connect and Play program, which is about giving children positive experiences to connect with their body, their sensory systems, and their communication. We have drumming circle part of it. We have yoga, art, music. One of the parents that I spoke to in Pakistan, which is across the world, ended up hosting a drumming circle for her child, her autistic child, in the school. Because she's like, you're doing something really cool. I want to do it. So it's all about sparking change and innovation that's going to have this ripple effect throughout the world. So,
yes.
So one thing that is very, very important for me is to set the foundation and pioneer the way for the next generation of clinicians. Because being the change maker is hard, but we're here to do it together. It's such a wonderful change that's happening in the last few years. Now, instead of clinicians turning their backs on me or clinicians saying, this is not right, they're like, can you help me? Can we learn together? Is this right? I'm like, yeah, you know what? The fact that you're here and you're wanting to learn, you're doing it right. Just do it scared.
Just do it, period. Nike knew what they were doing with that phrase, by the way. Just do it. But it is. And I am incredibly grateful that you chose our field. Yeah. I am incredibly grateful that you chose our field to go into, because you hit it on the head. It is very scary to take the leap of faith and to do something new. Have you heard the man in the arena quote by Teddy Roosevelt? Oy vey. When I was writing the book, I was going to walk away from it, because I wanted to write a book for PFD that gave case scenarios, real life, honest case scenarios, and then tied it into, this is why I engaged in interprofessional education. And I got to a point where I couldn't do it. I talked to different publishers and they want to price point at such an astronomical rate, and that's cost prohibitive. I wanted to, knowledge should be shared. It shouldn't be hoarded. And I want to dismantle the notion of an ivory tower and take it apart brick by brick and build a road, right? So my husband sat me down, actually goes, woman, I'm all hog tie if you don't sit still. So we curled up in bed and watched one of Brené Brown's TED talk where she quoted Teddy Roosevelt, Man in the Arena. And it's all about when you're brave enough to stand there, essentially in the muck and the mire with the dust, the tears, and the blood on your face. We did that so that we can create the space for the future, right? And oh my God, did I ugly cry? I wept, because it was so very, very raw, right? But I wanted to make it different. And it is my understanding that you too have stood in an arena and made something different. And I want to hear about what it is that you've made, your third baby, if you will.
My third baby is a baby because it's a labor of so much love and a labor of a lot of clinical experience. So I am launching a First Phrases card deck. Now, these cards are powerful phrases that every child should need across 11 communication functions. When we think about communication, we're thinking about giving them purposeful phrases that they're going to need no matter your language learning style. So every child should be able to advocate for themselves. They should be able to protest. They should be able to express in new situations. So these phrases are, I'll let you know the communication functions, the 11 communication functions. Because when we're thinking about Gestalt language processors, we want to give them lots of phrases and that they're going to pick up as Gestalts. When we're thinking about analytic language learners, we're thinking about enriching their environment. So what was happening was a lot of clinicians were saying, well, Farah, where do I start? I'm like, well, we have to model language across communication functions. And they're like, what does that even mean? Like, you're saying that I'm just supposed to talk? I'm like, no. Everything has to be purposeful. Yes, we're talking to our children. We're making natural communication, but we want to make sure that we have a place to start. And I wanted to create a bridge for clinicians that have only done medical model-based services where it's all deficit-based. Because you can't throw someone in the ocean and tell them to swim. We have to find the bridge between it, right? So these are flashcards across 11 communication functions. So they're commenting, help, daily activities, transition, protest, shared joy, sensory, new situations, self-advocacy, empowerment, request. And on the cards, in very big, bold letters, it has the phrase written, it has an image, and then it has a QR code. Children can scan the QR code and it has voicing of my children and my niece and other children saying these phrases. So we're enriching their environment by creating an opportunity for them to read, see, hear those phrases. And for parents, it gives them something tangible. Okay, this week I'm going to pull the cards that are protests and I know how to model it. Oh, now I'm going to do empowerment. Now I'm doing shared joy. And before you know it, they have this huge library to go to. The card deck is big. It's a 100 card deck. So there's 87 phrases. And then there's some blank cards on there that you can use a dry erase marker to write. Because we also want to individualize language to your environment. So say if the kid says, doesn't like, don't touch me, and they want to say something else for it, you can write it down yourself. So we're making sure that we're giving the parents and the clinicians the opportunity to thrive and to empower them, be like, oh, I got this. I can do this. So that's how it came about. The last few years, I've been writing down all the phrases that I've been giving the kids and all the phrases that they've been saying and logging it. So it's some of the favorites that the kids have needed. And one thing that's very important that's not talked about as much is the communication function of empowerment. I can do this. I'm strong. I'm brave. Because now we're giving them the self-talk. Now we're giving them the executive functioning skills for them to be successful academically down the road. So I want to put that to the families, to the clinicians, to give them an opportunity to support their children. And say, if you are an AAC specialist, you'll know, okay, on my system, I have requests, but I don't have anything for commenting. Because for me, and what the research has shown is if children don't have commenting, then when they get to stage 4, they tend to regress back to their original stages because then they can't create those new novel phrases. When they don't have all these communication functions, they can tend to plateau because they don't know where to go. So we want to create and enrich the child's language in the best way that they can. And on the market, I was looking everywhere. There's words. It's all first words. It's all first words. There's no phrases, which led me to, and I was like, all right, let's just do this. Let's create something.
I identified it. Now let's fill the void. Yes.
And that's how the Connect and Play program came. We looked at each other and we're like, we keep trying to piecemeal and send people to so many different places. Let's just do it ourselves. And then these first phrases, I was like, I'm already sending all these phrases to all the clinicians that are asking. I think I just need to put it out there. And I'm just doing it scared and hoping that we can support as many families and clinicians as I can.
You're doing it bold and brave and beautiful. So, I mean, it might be scared, but hell, you're showing up and you're leading this forward. So thank you. Seriously, thank you. Okay, I want to buy a set for my clinic. Where do I go?
Yeah, so we are going to officially launch at MBosla in April this year, 2024. You can go to gestaltgoodness.com website. And I do have a freebie that I will be sending out that for those that are listening can download it. And there's a few cards that you get a good idea on where you can start. And it's one thing that's very important is we are not using this to drill language. None of this is about taught language. We are not using these as traditional flashcards. And if you're thinking this is going to help your child speak, no. What we are doing is we're enriching their environment. And the first thing you should do is get the child a dynamic AAC system. First thing you should do is enrich their environment, but this is a support to enrich the environment.
Yes. Okay. Farwa, if somebody wants to follow you or reach out to you, how do they find you?
Sure. So you can find me on Instagram at one-on-one speech therapy. And my website is one-on-one speech therapy.com. And then if you are looking for the flashcards, it's gestaltgoodness.com.
And it's my understanding that you also have webinars with Speech Therapy PD.
I do. Yep. I will be speaking at the upcoming spring conference at Speech Therapy PD. And I do have a few courses already on there.
Yay. Okay, I cannot express my gratitude for you enough. So with my whole heart, I'm really glad that our paths crossed at ASHA and that I am truly in awe of what you're doing. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's clinicians like you that inspire me. So thank you.
Now I'm going to cry. Okay, everybody, come check us out next month at MBosla if you haven't registered yet. It's in Raleigh, and it truly is like one of my favorite conferences to go to every single year. You're going to meet just the most amazing people, and the lectures are just bloody brilliant. So, oh, and then the gala. The gala is a blast. They have the thing that you do, like you stand, and then the cameras zoom around you with pictures.
That's fun. I'm actually speaking at MBosla, too, on holistic treatment for autistic children and where to start. And I'll be at the gala, so I can't wait.
And if you come through, I'm doing one on feeding tubes and why feeding tubes can be friends and not foes. So we hope to see you there. And MBosla, thank you for being you.
Thank you for joining us for today's course. To complete the course, you must log into your account and complete the quiz and the survey. If you have indicated that you are part of the ASHA registry and entered both your ASHA number and a complete mailing address in your account profile prior to course completion, we will submit earned CEUs to ASHA. Please allow 1 to 2 months from the completion date for your CEUs to reflect on your ASHA transcript. Please note that if this information is missing, we cannot submit to ASHA on your behalf. Thanks again for joining us. We hope to see you next time.